Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to human suffering, death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
What's that? It's a bear! It's a goose! It's a nuclear missile! I'm Kelly.
Mutually assured destruction? Nuts to that. I'm Adam.
La 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 zarbamba. I'm Andy.
What's that, 5 missiles? Wake me when it's 10. I'm Sean, and this is Acid Pop. Hello everyone, and welcome back. Today, we're going to be talking about the close calls that we had in coming to the nuclear holocaust.
Ooh.
Yep. Which we've come too close too many times for my comfort, but we'll get into that.
No, we need more of these bombs. I heard it from the president.
Yep. So, as you may recall from our amputations episode, nucleus comes from the Latin word nucleus, which is a small nut. And holocaust is from the Greek holos, meaning whole, and kostos, meaning to burn. So to burn away completely in a shower of nuts.
Loses something in translation.
So they're pistachios then.
Yeah. So there is I did find a phobia. It was nucleomichophobia, which is fear of nuclear holocaust, nuclear weapons, that sort of thing. But I couldn't find an origin, which makes me suspicious that it's a newly made up term, which doesn't mean that it's not valid. I mean, that's where all words came from at some point.
That's how all of these things started.
Another term for it? The 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's a valid fear to have, I believe.
Yeah. But the thing is, since it was sort of new, as far as I could tell, I couldn't find any of the root breakdown. So I've got nucleus and I've got phobia, but the middle part, the omichu, is the part that I couldn't get. So I'm going to take a stab at it and say that that was omit, which is Latin and it means to let fall. Hmm. That's my best guess at the root of nucleomichophobia.
Probably a pretty good guess.
I think it's omit you.
Yeah.
Being omitted by a nuclear holocaust.
So, hydrogen bombs are powered by nuclear fusion, and to do this, extremely high temperatures smash together 2 hydrogen isotopes to form an atom of helium, and this releases a tremendous amount of force and radioactivity and heat and everything else that's bad.
Is that how helium is made?
Yeah, it is actually how helium is made. I'm not going to go too much into the science, but if you're interested in more, I strongly recommend the Caustic Soda episodes, both on nuclear meltdowns and just on nuclear weapons in general. But this episode is more specifically about how close we've come to using those weapons.
Well, now I'm picturing helium being created when a nuclear bomb goes off, so it's just people screaming in really high-pitched voices.
Maybe Trump's not crazy. Maybe he's just trying to solve the helium shortage.
Yeah, it is a problem. So we're on to our acid pop quiz. True or false, nuclear weapons continue to grow in destructive capacity.
You mean over time?
Yeah. So we made the first one. They've gotten bigger and badder since then.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, they're bigger than the first one. I think they've gotten more strategic.
I'm going to say it's true.
I'm going to say false.
Adam, without big nuclear weapons, we cannot create Godzilla. So you are just raining on the parade.
Well, Adam is correct. From 1945 to 1961, Russia and America were increasing the yield of their bombs. But after that, they decided to pare them back a little bit. And this is due to the fact that they had a lot more precision and they wanted to some extent decrease the adverse side effects that come along with nuclear weapons and fallout.
We want to kill some people, but not every people.
Exactly.
So too big, too big.
Yeah.
Scale it back.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things about nuclear weapons is when they were testing it, it's like, this could catch the atmosphere on fire. Like, eh, give it a shot.
It's the worst that could happen. Yeah. I just said.
So America has enough nukes to wipe out all life on Earth.
Sure.
All that is such plausible. A big word.
All life on Earth?
Yep.
I think you'd have to place them properly and with the right wind stuff. But
yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
I think things would survive, though, like bacteria and stuff.
USA. USA.
I think there's some deep sea worms that would make it. I'm going to say it's false.
Yep, it is in fact false. So if all the nuclear weapons in the world were detonated strategically around the world to spread them out as evenly as possible, life would limp on. It wouldn't be very fun or very pretty, but we haven't yet gotten to the point with nuclear weapons where we can destroy the entire planet. So that's uplifting.
One irradiated rabbit.
So true or false? There is a button that can launch all of America's nuclear weapons.
So I'm going to say false and really, really hope.
Like, what does the button do? Does it tell each bomb where to go, or do they just go straight up in the air and come down?
Well, I'll tell you what the button's supposed to do is basically tell every base that has bombs that they should launch those bombs, and they have predetermined targets.
Okay.
I was going to say, it's up to your discretion. Some guy's just like, I've always fucking hated St. Louis.
Detroit shithole town.
Yeah, I think the process is too simple, but I don't think it's that simple. Yeah. I'm going to say false.
What'd you say, Andy?
I said false, and I'm really crossing my fingers that there's not one of these buttons.
I'll say true, so someone does.
Well, it is false. But there is a package called the football.
Right.
Yeah. So the football is a briefcase that contains all the information the president would need to launch all of America's nuclear weapons.
But he's not going to read it.
This is a very it's a very bad briefcase.
Yeah. So if he decides to use this case, there is no double check. If he gives the order, the missiles launch. And Russia has a very similar system. And basically, if you see secret agents around the president, one of them is always carrying this case.
Yeah, at the Trump resort, someone took a selfie with the person carrying the nuclear football.
Of course.
And as long as we're advertising other podcasts today, Radiolab has an excellent episode about the nuclear football and the complete lack of any sort of checks around it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's just because it's still sort of a holdover from the 1950s, but it was basically that, you know, if it's just a retaliation thing. It's like, if we detect that missiles are coming and they're going to wipe out all of America, we just want to like have our last hurrah be to destroy something else before we go down. So,
but we wouldn't even get to be able to enjoy it.
No, nope. Whole mutually assured destruction.
Yep.
To
yep.
keep peace.
I feel peaceful.
Okay. Anyway.
Yes. Well, I would feel very peaceful after the bombs fell. I wouldn't have any time to worry about the football.
Yeah. So there were several years of testing between when the first bomb was detonated at the Manhattan Project and when the first nuclear bomb was dropped on Japan. True or false?
I think that's false. I don't think it was years.
No?
Certainly not several years.
Also, I'll be contrarian this time. It's true. Absolutely.
I think that was a rush job.
Yeah. So you think it's false, Adam?
Yeah.
It is false. There were, in fact, 3 weeks.
Oh, God. This seems to be working. Let's do it.
So as Andy mentioned, when that first bomb went off, there was a small but not insignificant thought that it might light the entire atmosphere of the planet on fire. There was a slightly more significant, though still not super significant, thought that it would just destroy all of New Mexico.
Well, that...
But when it didn't do either
we
of those things,
we decided to take that chance.
They greenlit it to be dropped on another country. So they said it worked.
Well, yeah,
once.
Because that Japan's not New Mexico.
So the first bomb was detonated on July 16th, 1945, and the first bomb dropped on Japan was August 6th, 1945.
I've become death, destroyer of worlds.
Destroyer of New Mexico.
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
I've never been there.
It's a land of enchantment.
And radiation.
When it comes to nuclear bombs, there are basically three things that can kill you. And I'd like you to rate them from closest to furthest away as far as killing power. So, like, if you outrun, if you're at the epicenter, all three of these will kill you. But if you get further away, only two will. If you get only further away, only one will. So what's the close to far order of these between radiation, concussive force, and heat?
I'm going to say closest is concussive force, then heat, then radiation.
Okay.
That sounds good.
I'm going to say heat, then concussive force, then radiation.
Okay.
I like Andy's answer.
All right. Actually, I said it in the right order. It's radiation, concussive force, heat.
Really?
Yep. So we're going to assume we're talking about a 1 megaton bomb here. So if you dropped a 1 megaton bomb, it would kill everything with radiation within 1.4 miles or 2.3 kilometers. The concussive force would kill everything within 3.8 miles or 6.2 kilometers. And the heat would kill everything within 7.4 miles or 12 kilometers.
7 miles is such a large area. Yeah,
that's a long way. And, you know, I will put the disclaimer that this depends on a lot of things. This example is assuming that it drops and you have a clear line of sight straight to the bomb without any buildings or anything in the way. Like, all of that changes the math significantly, but this is just sort of rough.
Why are they bombing the salt flats?
And I'm assuming this is immediate deaths, too. Like, radiation's going to keep killing people as long as people can get cancer from it.
Yeah, this is like 90% death with instantaneous death from these effects. So, yeah, there's still radioactive fallout, and that can kill lots more people after the fact. But, yeah,
what a fun device you've made. Good job, Einstein.
So that was a 1 megaton bomb that I was using for that example. The bomb dropped on Hiroshima was 15 kilotons. So there's 1,000 kilotons in a megaton. So it was 0.015 of a megaton. So what is the range of modern nuclear weapons? Like, how small do they get and how big do they get?
I've heard something like a suitcase nuke. I'm going to say that they're as...
I'm going to say as small as, like, a city block.
Well, no, like, I'm looking for kilotons here, or megatons.
No. I'm going to say, so those other ones were 15 kilotons, you said?
Japan was 15. Our last example was 1 megaton.
I'm going to say they range in kilotons, 0.5 kilotons.
I was going to say 1, yeah.
And 500 megatons.
Are you talking about, like, the biggest bomb ever made?
No, these are the bombs that basically we have on standby to launch at people.
We'll say 1 to 10.
1 to 10 what?
1 kiloton and 10 megatons?
Oh, wait. You said the Hiroshima one was 15 kilotons?
Correct.
Yeah, so I'm going 1 kiloton to 10 kilotons.
10 kilotons. Okay.
I'm going to say 1 kiloton to 20 megatons.
Oh, wow. Amazingly That's close. It was 6 kilotons up to 20 megatons. Ooh. So in our last example, that would kill you up to 7 miles away. That was 1 megaton. So this is 20 times stronger than that. So that all being said, how big was the largest nuclear explosive ever set off?
I know this one.
Yeah.
You want to share?
I'm going to wait for you guys to answer.
It was 21 megatons.
8 megatons.
Well, we have 20 megaton bombs.
Yes, but I don't know that we've ever blown them up.
Oh, well, you got to test them on something. But
the largest bomb ever detonated was by Russia, and it was 50 megatons.
Correct.
That was Tsar bomb.
The Tsar Bomba. And that was in the 1960s, and that was when Russia was like, you know, maybe that's big enough. And they started...
Well, what happened was America had really precise, like, strategic bombs, and Russia couldn't do that. So they just made a bomb that could kill everything.
Yeah.
And the original design was actually for 100 megatons.
Yep.
But on the projections, the plane dropping it wouldn't be able to get away.
Oh, of course.
They also couldn't get a hold of the better uranium. I don't remember exactly how it works, but, like, there's one uranium that works pretty dang good, and there's one uranium that works really, really good, and they can only get the pretty darn good one.
Sergey, you bring me store brand uranium.
It was on sale.
I don't know if you have the stats for that thing in front of you, but every once in a while I read up on it again. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when they detonated it, the seismic waves it created were measurable its third time around the Earth.
Well, then.
Yeah.
So my 500 megaton was a little too big then.
Yes. Might have cracked the Earth.
They made a point, I suppose. That was the time when Cold War, everyone was making a point.
Yeah.
That's quite the point.
If a nuclear attack appeared imminent, how long does the president have to decide to launch a counterattack?
He has approximately 7 minutes. That's all the time he has to play with us.
You keep taking my answers. 4 minutes.
So does this mean, like, the missiles are in the air?
They detect a launch, so that can be from the ground.
Are we being attacked by Canada? Because that's going to change things.
Quebec is tired of your shit.
The thing about these bombs, and I don't know, don't quote me on this, but I think pretty much regardless of where you launch them from, they've got to go almost to space and then back down. So it's a long route no matter where you're starting from.
I bet it's faster from Canada.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 15 minutes.
Okay.
I want to change my answer. 20 minutes.
Adam's getting jealous, but it is, in fact, 12 minutes. That's the time that the president has to decide whether to basically kill all of Russia or not.
Well, that's longer than his Please attention don't span, spite so. Russia.
So what is breeding?
Well, I thought you were old enough to...
I raised my eyebrows pointedly.
I didn't hear it.
Raise
it with
a man and a woman.
Did you have a baby on the way?
Where did it come from?
That is when they leave two nuclear missiles in a room, and when you come back, there's a smaller one right next to them.
I'm going to say it has something to do with the chain reaction of nuclear fission.
Yeah, I also think it has something to do with, like, the breakdown of uranium or something.
Yeah, pretty close. It's basically if you turn a non-fissionable material into a fissionable one. So uranium-239 is breeded into plutonium-239. And plutonium-239 is a common ingredient in nuclear weapons, but uranium-239 is not, because it's not fissionable. That's how they make stuff to blow up bombs.
No, great. You could just give the secret away.
So what does DEFCON stand for?
Defense condition.
Okay.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Like if we're at DEFCON 5, you need very good defense, maybe. Does it go up a number or down a number? Who knows?
I think it's actually mispronounced. It's DEFCON.
Yeah.
And it's death condition.
Yeah, that's more appropriate. Yep, Andy had it. It's defense readiness condition.
I really don't hear that readiness in the word.
Yeah. No. The readiness is silent.
I mean, the way Kelly puts it, it sounds more like a Decepticon.
So the scale goes from 1 to 5, where 1 is the worst, and 5 is... Basically, 5 is no worries, 4 is watch your back, 3 is get your boots on and gear up, 2 is get out there, and 1 is fire at will.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. They each have a code name. I forget what all of them are, but number 1 is like locked and loaded or something.
Which is grab your ass and run.
So that's the end of our quiz. Now we're going to get on to some of our stories. My inspiration for this episode was the recent Hawaii scare, which not going to talk about that, but that sort of spurred this on. It's like, you know, this stuff, even though it's been a while since the Cold War ended, this stuff can still come up, and it's still pretty scary even today, and I think people tend to lose sight of that. But the worst of this was probably the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1961. So what happened was America had set up shop with some nuclear missiles in Italy and Turkey because, you know, that's a lot closer to the Soviet Union than America is.
Yes.
They also tried to invade Cuba at the Bay of Pigs invasion. And this was really pissing the Soviet Union off because, one, they had nuclear missiles parked right next door, and two, they were kind of... with Cuba, so they're like, leave them alone.
Hey, guys, come on.
So the USSR and Cuba agreed to let the USSR house some of its nuclear weapons in Cuba, which is 90 miles from Florida. This was all going down in 1962, and the White House, when confronted with claims that Soviets were housing missiles in Cuba, they said, nah, there's no way they could have gotten missiles down there without us knowing. But then one of their planes flying overhead took some pictures of some Soviet missiles just chilling on the beach in Cuba.
These
are grain silos.
We just laid them down because it's more energy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So America set up the blockade to stop any more missiles from being delivered and basically say, hey, you need to take these missiles out from Cuba. And the USSR says, okay, fine. Will you take your missiles out from Turkey? And basically, for about 13 days, they were just like, no, you do it. This went back and forth. But eventually, both sides agreed to take back their nuclear weapons. And we did not all die. So that's good. Or pre-die in some of our cases.
Both of us agreed, wink, to take out the nuclear weapons.
Did they see me winking? That was the biggest and most noteworthy scare, but there have been lots of smaller ones. So while all this was going on, in Duluth, Minnesota, an intruder was spotted trying to hop the fence at an American Air Force base. So an alarm was raised and shots were fired at the intruder. Now, the alarm was supposed to also trigger other alarms at other nearby air bases. But at the Volk Field in Wisconsin, the alarm had been wired incorrectly.
Oh, no.
So instead of just sounding an intruder alert, it set off a DEFCON 3 alert.
Fun.
So this basically alerted the F-106A interceptors armed with nukes at that base to take off. So DEFCON 3 is far enough up the scale that they don't drill for this. So there was no possibility in their minds that this was a test or anything. So they got in their planes and started getting ready to take off. But luckily, somebody from another Air Force base found out about the mishap, literally hopped in a car and drove like hell to this base. And then literally just like drove up on the runway and was like, stop, stop, don't go anywhere.
It was just bad wiring. The electrician's been killed.
That all got stopped, but then they apprehended the intruder. And what was it? What was going on with that intruder, you think?
He was a pilot who got drunk the previous night, and this was his walk of shame home.
He was sneaking back on base.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to be dramatic. He was a Russian spy, but not a very good one.
Yeah. Under the cover of afternoon.
He was hunting weapon.
No, it was a bear.
He was hunting rabbits.
Was it
God, he's a Russian bear.
That was a black bear, not a red bear.
Oh, goodness.
Yep.
Don't want a sound that, like, oh, no.
So we almost went and bombed somebody because bear.
Yep.
Because a bear somewhere else, not even like a bear at that place.
It's just like that kid's book, The Day the Bear Destroyed the World. On November 9th, 1979, a warning pops up on four American command center computers indicating that 250 Soviet missiles are en route to America.
That's a bunch.
Yeah. So immediately, American missiles were armed for a counterattack. Senior officers convened to assess the threat, and while they were doing that, the computer pipes back up and says, oh no, never mind, it's 2,200 missiles inbound.
Oh.
Well, come on now.
2 million missiles.
Yeah.
Now you're just being ridiculous, computer.
So after 6 very tense minutes, they could not confirm any missiles with their other satellites or radar, so they decided to stand down. So what was going on here?
Matthew Broderick was messing with it.
The president's computer, like he clicked on a program, was like, I know how to deal with this. I'm going to mess with the generals.
It was another bear.
Bear hackers.
The bears are testing our defenses.
Now, it turned out that in the Pentagon, there was a training tape that had a scenario in it, and somebody accidentally put the training tape in the real computer, and so that activated the early warning systems throughout the Pentagon.
Would you like to play a game?
Of course.
So after this, they decided to move both the tapes and the training exercise out of the main building.
Seems like a good place to watch war games.
You go to the training shed and do your training.
So, January 25th, 1995, Russian radar picks up something that looks like a Trident missile launched from a submarine offshore near Moscow. They believe this to be a tactical strike on Moscow to knock out their command center before launching a large-scale attack. When military advisors track the missile, the president had 10 minutes to decide whether to launch a counterattack. They decided to track it and just sort of like see what happens and sort of wait till the last moment. But after 8 minutes, it looked like the missile was in fact going to crash into the Norwegian Sea. So they did not hit the button. So what happened?
Good. Airs again. That was a dolphin that breached really good.
The submarine was celebrating someone's birthday, and they set off some fireworks.
And it was right in front of the radar tower.
I don't know. Considering the nonsense that's happened with the rest of this, is probably some Norwegian kid's kite or something.
Not too far off the mark. It turns out that some Norwegian scientists had built a rocket to test, and they'd sort of forgot to tell everybody that they were testing their rocket.
Just a high school physics class?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to win the prize for not... Why is he German? I'm going to win the prize for not cracking the egg this time.
I will say I want to appreciate everyone's desire to wait until the very last minute to kill everyone on the Earth.
Decision.
Yeah, it was nice of them.
Okay, guys, let's track this thing for another minute and then just hit the button. I'm kidding.
I got to pee, but if it crashes before I get back, then you can go ahead and push the button. So on November 5th, 1956, NORAD received several reports that, when added together, looked like the first steps of a Soviet attack. So here's what happened. A British bomber went down, several Soviet fighter planes were spotted over Syria, and a fleet of Soviet ships suddenly changed course, and an unidentified aircraft was detected over Turkey. Luckily, before anybody could turn the key, all these things were identified as coincidence. The British plane went down because it was having mechanical troubles. The flight over Syria was because the Syrian president had been visiting Moscow and they were escorting him home. The ships were doing a scheduled exercise that had been overlooked. And the unidentified plane over Turkey was a flock of geese.
I do like that we have some sort of like list of a checklist of things that are happening. It's like, oh God, it's an attack. Yeah. They have a big poster. It's like of all these things, like, okay, that one. And then it all points together like, oh, okay, that's just the Tsar returning home.
It's like, bingo, quick, turn the key.
Quick, set off the bombs. I've been aching to do this.
Pattern seeking animals. That's us.
Yeah. So just a couple rapid fire ones here at the end. October 5th, 1960, radar equipment in Thule, Greenland detected a large scale Soviet missile launch that turned out to be the moon rising.
What's that scary that silver object? Make it stop.
24th of November, 1961, NORAD lost communication with several ballistic missile early warning system sites simultaneously. NORAD went on high alert, but it turns out that all those stations were routed through a single relay station in Colorado, and that station was having technical difficulties.
Wiring again.
So much for redundancies.
In our other episodes, we learn about, like, elevators. There's a redundancy. Yeah. Why? For our nuclear...
No time. But our last story is far and away my favorite story. So September 26th, 1983, Lieutenant Colonel Stanislav Petrov was on duty at the Serpukhov 15 bunker when a warning comes up from a surveillance satellite that five Minuteman II ICBMs were launched from America. Now, these are nuclear weapons. If you check the rule book, what he was supposed to do at this point was immediately send a warning up the chain of command. However, he had doubts about the warning, so he decided to just chill out and see what happened. So a bit later, the computer piped up again and said four more missiles were inbound. And he felt like he was playing the odds, though, so he decided to sit this one out, too.
Well, at this point, he's going to have to admit that he didn't report the first group.
Yep.
Yeah.
So luckily, no missiles arrived. And they took him aside afterwards and said, hey, why didn't you call this in? Why didn't you report it? And he responded, when people start a war, they don't send 5 missiles. So what happened is, as far as I can understand it, the satellite was looking across the globe at America, and the sun was on the other side of the globe, and a solar flare shot up that, from the satellite's perspective, looked a lot like a missile launch.
So yep. What is with the military and constantly being confounded by nature?
And everybody knows the sun looks just like a bunch of missiles from a distance.
Starting to sound like Mother Earth is trying to take us out just through trickery.
Yeah.
Just by bluffing us.
Yeah. Earth goddess, damn, the bear didn't work.
Try geese next time.
So yeah, when Colonel Petrov said this to his commanders, they were like, well, you didn't do what you're supposed to, so we probably need to punish you, but you were right, so we don't want to punish you too hard. So they basically just like gave him a reprimand for not typing up his report correctly or something like that. But he went on to retire, and he was actually given several medals for just basically being a cool guy and not wanting to destroy the world.
Pushing the button medal.
Yeah. From people all over the world. And there was actually a movie made about him. It was called The Man Who Saved the World.
That feels like a pretty dull movie. Man looks at screen, considers it, says, let's see.
I just imagine him with like a newspaper and his feet propped up on the desk, and he sort of like puts the newspaper down and peers over. He's like, nah, it's probably fine. He just goes back to the paper.
What is that? Just 5 missiles? Blah.
This is Sean as missile control commander.
I feel like this is my kindred spirit. Not that they'd ever let me get that high in the military, but... And that was all the stories that I had. Anybody have any personal nuclear scare stories?
I don't think I do. If I was ever close enough to a nuclear apocalypse, I didn't know it.
Surely you'd remember. Yeah, I don't. When I was a kid, I lived all over the country, and I did lots of different drills for lots of different things. Tornadoes and earthquakes and fire and all kinds of stuff. But I don't think I've ever actually done a drill for a nuclear attack. I think by the time I got to school, they'd pretty much, the public knowledge was out there that if it's coming, there really isn't anything you can do.
Hiding under your desk won't actually help.
Yeah.
Panicking is fine at this point.
There's that, you can get it on Rift Tracks right now, actually, which is the Mystery Science Theater kind of spinoff. The original film that's Duck and Cover, starring a cartoon turtle.
Yeah.
And the entire film is like, if you see the flash, just get on the ground, cover your head.
Yeah. That's all you need.
And it shows these people surviving, and I'm like, wow. Were people made out of lead in the 50s?
Yeah, nice picture. Wasn't that the same one that was in The Iron Giant?
I believe so, yes. It's got like a nice little tune, like duck and cover, and it shows a turtle going into a shell, and he's like, I survived a bomb.
Yeah, but turtles are lined with lead, so that's not really a fair comparison.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't ever do the... We had a very similar drill that was for earthquakes, where it's like, get under your desk and hope that the ceiling doesn't crush you.
Yeah.
You didn't mention the largest bomb ever detonated by America.
No, I didn't.
Were you going to?
No, go ahead.
No, no, no.
It was the Castle Bravo test.
Yeah.
It was accidentally the largest bomb ever detonated by America.
Oh.
It was originally supposed to have a 6-megaton yield. And it ended up being 15.
Wow.
Because of like an unforeseen interaction with like a lithium ion they used.
Huh.
So just much larger than they thought it was going to be.
Shook Take in that, a little Russia. More plutonium than they meant to.
Yeah. It said just add a pinch. I don't know how much that is.
Someone had really big hands.
Here it says add uranium to taste.
I always forget, is TSP tablespoon or teaspoon? Oh, well, I'll just use both.
That's where uranium cake comes from.
All right, well, then we're going to move on to what are your morals worth? So today I'm going to ask, how much would I have to pay you to tote around the football for a year?
In the current administration?
Uh-huh.
A lot.
I was going to say, I'll remind you that if things went south, you could make a break for it.
Yeah, better with me than with most people.
Do I get to take cool selfies?
Oh, yeah. All you want.
Do I have job security? Like, I'm not going to get fired from this for a year?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you did something stupid, you could probably get fired.
I foresee not agreeing with a lot of things that my boss would say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your job isn't to do anything but stand there and hold this suitcase. That's it. No one's going to ask you to do anything.
I think that'd
be
kind of interesting to get that fly on the wall viewpoint of everything.
Can I leak to the media?
Not until you're done. But afterwards, you know, you might go to jail because I'm sure they'll ask you to sign some non-disclosure agreements. But yeah, you could write your biography and say whatever you want.
I can record everything that goes on in the Oval Office. Guys, you don't understand.
He said, give me the briefcase like 5 times a day.
Sure, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd do that.
How much?
I want a good salary.
Yeah.
I mean, I am carrying the thing that could destroy another country or perhaps continent.
Oh, man. And you're standing in a room with Trump all your days for a year. I can't even listen to him on television.
I will say most of the time, the person with the football isn't like the president couldn't like reach out and touch him. They're usually, you know, 15, 30 feet away.
I would have to die if it happened, though. Because I would try and run.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, odds are nothing's going to go wrong.
Yeah. So much, like, stress and responsibility, though.
Yeah, there's a very lengthy test before you're allowed to carry the football. But you get to go past all that.
$250,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd do it for around $150,000. I'd also hide some kerosene and a match in there, so if he did ask for it was like very insistent, I'd be like,
$250,000, and I get to bring down the government when I'm done. I'm good with that.
Yeah, you could try.
Yeah, I was gonna say $200,000. That sounds like a good annual salary for that.
I bet you a dollar I can tape something that'll do the trick.
I don't know. Nothing's worked so far. Yeah, that's probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say 200,000 too. That sounds about right.
I thought the question was going to be something like, how much would I have to pay you to press the button?
Yeah. No, not going
to. I don't think it matters at that point.
Yeah. I may ask you every once in a while on this show to kill one person, but I won't ever ask you to kill every person.
You push the button, here's all of America's wealth. Goodbye.
Oh, look, you have all the bitcoins.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this week. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.